Well, hi there, ladies of No BS. Welcome to our maintenance call for this month of June. We're still in June, right? Yeah, still June. Hi, welcome. Send me a note in the chat. Let me know that you can hear me. Tell me where you're coming from. We got some friends here today. I am Coach Lizzie. I am so thrilled to be here with you. We're talking about maintenance. Just for the record, this is a live coaching call, which means you can raise your hand and you can get coached and we can talk. But even better than that, you don't have to be in maintenance for us to talk, for you to like raise your hand and be like, I would love to be in maintenance, but I'm 50 pounds away. Guess what? You can still raise your hand. It's gonna be great. Oh, awesome. We've got Maureen is here, Cheryl, Sandy, Debbie, Nancy. Hi everyone. Thank you so much for joining me today. Like I said, please raise your hands so we can chat. And anyone with anything that they want to talk about that could be kind of sort of maybe a little bit related to maintenance, or like one day I'd like to be in maintenance, or I don't even know how to think about maintenance, you can raise your hand and we can talk. Oh, we've got Darlene is here too. Fantastic. And Anne and Catherine, hi. It's funny, we were having about 15 minutes ago, like an intense thunderstorm and lightning. And a while ago, a couple months ago, I was doing an evening call, and very randomly, there was a fire in my kind of neighborhood backyard, like two houses away. So I came on, like, wow, natural disaster just nearly averted. Fortunately, it doesn't look like, fingers crossed, that my internet's going to go out. But you know, I live in Florida. We get the fun weather. Like, I might as well, hurricane season starting. You know, maybe one day we'll have one of those. I don't think I need to worry about earthquakes, hopefully. A fun fact, I grew up in Miami, Florida, and I was a rising senior, almost a senior in high school, when Hurricane Andrew rolled through, and that was very memorable for sure. If you ever want to hear hurricane stories, I got you some. We were out of power for over 3 weeks in August in South Florida. My mom made it like 21 of the 22 days of no power before having a nervous breakdown. And I wrote my college essay on it. It was just really interesting. I learned how to like do a chainsaw. I learned how to siphon gas out of a car. All kinds of really useful skills. There was something else. Oh, run a generator. I probably couldn't do those now, but yeah, it was fun. Did I hear that Kathy's call dropped the other day? I did not hear that. Yeah, no hurricanes. Sandy is with me in Florida. We're like, no, thank you. No hurricanes. But it is interesting having lived through a Category 5 hurricane. Now when one rolls by, I'm like, that's nothing. It's just a three. Come on, people. Anyway, it is useful to evacuate when there's a hurricane. The weather can be no joke. But we're not here to talk about weather. We're here to talk about maintenance, right? So please go ahead and raise your hand. By the way, I want to say again, I think I said this on the last maintenance call, but like huge thank you to the ladies who volunteered and raised their hand and had calls with me, maintainers, who were like, tell me about what it's like in maintenance. And so together, the 12 of them plus me, Baker's Dozen, we put together a documentary of like what real life is in maintenance. And it is now living in the maintenance course. I'm gonna find it for you. And no, not that. Sugar. I'm gonna find the link. And it's amazing. I really love how the calls came together. Ugh, seriously. Okay, I'm gonna find it. Docu, there it is. Not, there it is. Okay, got it. Links. I can do this. Now I've lost you guys. There we go. Okay, so here's the link to the maintenance documentary from my 12 amazing ladies who just told me like what's it like, real life maintenance. So if you're ever, you know, whether you have 5 pounds to lose, 50 pounds to lose, I really encourage you to go and watch this documentary. It is in the maintenance course. It's like module 5, and it's just me having conversations, and we kind of tell a story of like what maintenance is really like, what they thought it was going to be. Unicorns and rainbows, of course. What it actually is, turns out there is no parade. It's just another Wednesday. And how they changed their thinking from like being a dieter to a normal eater. And I really appreciate all of the ladies who contributed to that. Nancy in the chat, she's one who contributed to that. She said that she really enjoyed helping out. It really was fantastic. And thank you, Julie. If that's the right Julie that I'm thinking of, also was in it. And just so appreciative. Really, go check it out. If you're ever wondering what's it really like in maintenance, go check it out. So that's in the maintenance course, module 5. And if you're curious and you want to talk about like what maintenance is like for you, or if you, again, you're 50 pounds away, you're like, I don't even know how to get there. I'd love for you all to raise your hands because so far we ain't got no hands raised. So I've got a couple of things I could talk about, but I don't think you want a monologue for an hour from me. So let's see. What could we talk about? Let's see. We've got, you know what? Recently, I've been thinking about, B says, your future me. I love your. Thank you. So B put it in the chat that she's like, I'm future her, that she loves my arms. And I'm sorry to hear you've had some health challenges, but you're back right on. You know what's funny? After one of the most recent calls, somebody asked me in Ask Coaches. They're like, Lizzie, how do I get arms like you? So I very much appreciate that. I receive that. And I'll answer the question for everyone listening. How do you get fantastic arms? The number one thing I do to have great arms like this, I stop it enough. I know it's not that exciting, but really, truly, if there's one thing that matters more than anything else, it is stopping at enough because you can have fantastic muscles, but it's hard to see them. It's hard to see the lines if you've got a lot of extra fluff going on it. And yes, once you get that one, once you focus on stopping enough, then there are other things you can do for fantastic arms. So I remember maybe this was my daughter was a baby, so it was like 17 years ago. A friend of mine said, the key to good arms is shoulders. And I was like, really? So ever since then, I've been focusing on shoulders, lifting weights. And so if you want nice arms, lift weights with focusing on the deltoid muscle, shoulders. So that's kind of pressing up, that's flies, things like that. I like to, whenever I do lift weights, I like to kind of get lots of bang for my buck. So most of my workouts with weights are compound movements. What that means is I am doing a movement that uses more than one muscle. So like, let's just say, for example, a shoulder press, you're using your shoulders, but you're also using your triceps. So I literally never work just my triceps. So like a skull crusher, and I don't do those because there are plenty of other movements like push-ups or again like shoulder presses that work the triceps. And I got enough going on down here. I don't need more ammunition for the bat wings. So anyway, if there's two things I would say, stop it enough, lift weights, focus on your shoulders. There you have it. All right, so another topic that I've been focusing on a little bit recently with the within the course, like other than doing my client calls, again, everybody, raise your hands. Anybody who wants to talk, we can talk, but it would really help if you would raise your hand first. Anywhere you're at, it sounds like everyone's like totally fine and completely nailing it in maintenance. No issues whatsoever. Thank you, Susan. All right, we got Susan. Let me see. Promote to panelist. Anybody else who is perhaps not perfectly nailing maintenance, maybe raise your hand. We can chat. Oh my goodness, it's Susan, my private client.
I gotta help you out, girlfriend.
Yeah, thank you. Hello. So good to
Hi.
see you. What's on your mind today?
Okay, so I am working on getting comfortable as I approach maintenance.
Yes. Okay.
And when it's that whole thing you've been talking about is perfectionism, right? And I just, it's that thing about chasing an impossible, I'm going to read right from what you said, chasing an impossible standard that you can't achieve. And I've talked about it, and that's when I explain it. It's like being in a round room and being told to find the corner.
That's not exactly what you said. What did you actually say?
Well, I'm having to pee in the corner.
Right.
Right. It's like being in a round room and told to go pee in a corner, but
Right.
it's that same, I don't know, visual of it, right? And
Right.
yeah. So what are your thoughts on how do you get, or how does anybody get comfortable with this and not feeling like I'm some sort of fraud, which is bullshit, because I've done this,
Yeah.
right? Right.
Right. I'm so glad you brought this up, and it actually really ties into what I was about to talk about related to consistency and how do we get consistent? Because so many of us say, I know what to do. I just can't make myself do it, or at least I can't consistently do it. And consistency plays into perfectionism in a really important way because we have this idea that I've got to get it right. And I purposely like right, and right is like perfect, or I blew it. And it's very yes or no, black or white, it's right or it's wrong.
Well, and what I know about trying to be right is all I'm trying to do is not be wrong.
Say more.
And trying to be right is like trying to avoid being wrong. It's not about being right. It's about avoiding being wrong and doing it wrong and not doing it good enough. And that's just another one of those mind fucks.
Right. And what you're actually alluding to is something that's really key into what perfectionism actually is. Because a lot of times we like to say, well, I ha hold myself to high standards. That's not perfectionism. Perfectionism is safety, it's a protection, it is a way to protect yourself from getting it wrong. So, Susan, what's the problem with getting it wrong?
Oh, well, that's old. I mean, that's like core wound stuff for me, for me.
You're not alone, I promise. So, but again, like I get things wrong all the time.
Well, and you know what? And I do too. And I've got things wrong, throughout my career in science and all of that, right? So it's not like, I mean, you don't get to, I mean, it's not like it hasn't happened, but I mean, it's like this driving force to not get things wrong.
What is so scary about getting it wrong?
Well, in the worst case, you can die.
Okay. I suppose if you're into skydiving,
Or, you leave the stuff all plugged in your house and a fire starts and you're right. It's all that,
okay.
safety. Well, it's safety. It's safety.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, if you get stuff like wrong, yeah, you can get dying, injured, and hurt.
Okay.
And property damage and bodily damage. Right. That's all.
Sure.
Yeah, but the chance of that happening, the probability of that is, pretty small.
Yeah, it's interesting. My mom once told me if you worry about all the things that could go wrong, you would never leave your house. And in fact, you would still be worried because space junk could fall on your house through your roof and hit you on your couch. So she's
Right.
like, listen, you mitigate the risks and then you go out there and you live your life. So where I'm trying to get at when I ask you, like, what's the problem with being wrong? What's so scary about being wrong is really this question. What do you make it mean when you get something wrong?
Oh, that's a real question. What do I make it mean when I get something wrong? Oh, I wasn't good enough.
Oh,
Oh, for sure.
okay.
I wasn't good enough.
Interesting. So, of course, your brain would be really, really afraid of getting it wrong. Just out of curiosity, is there, when you get it right, does that check the box of getting good enough, or does it just move the goalpost?
Sometimes both, but mostly it checks the box.
Okay.
Mostly it's like, yep, okay. Yeah, you're right. You're awesome. Yep.
Okay.
Press on.
So not a huge celebration. It's more like we get to live another day.
Well, but it's a dopamine hit. I mean,
All right.
it's not like it's a huge, I mean, it's, yeah, no, it's a dopamine hit. Okay, right on.
Okay.
Good. You did that.
So if the consequence of getting it wrong is I'm not enough, I'm not good enough, of course your brain would be really afraid of getting it wrong. Like this is high stakes here. Similarly, a lot of times when I say, like, what do you make it mean when you get it wrong? Someone will say, it means I am a failure. Similar kind of thing. Like the stakes are super high. And so when the stakes are super high, you're in a little bit of a threat kind of response. Like, it's kind of tense. And when you're feeling tense, it makes it really hard to learn. It's like,
Yes.
I'm right or wrong, but there's no learning really happening here. I'm just, I'm succeeding or failing. I'm meeting expectations or I'm failing. And so perfectionism is really just a protection from that, fear of failure. And so perfectionism oftentimes gets a bad rap, because there's maladaptive perfectionism and then there's adaptive perfectionism. And if anyone's ever interested in a really good book on perfectionism, most of the perfectionist books are like all the reasons why perfectionism is awful and screwing up your life. There's no question. It can definitely get in the way. But there is a good book that talks about the power and the ways to capitalize on that effort of perfectionism. And it's called The Perfectionist Guide to Losing Control. I can't remember the author, but that's the name of the book. So we can take that drive to want to get it right, to want to not fail, and we can shift it away from like the stakes are way too high. And we can be like, what if we just shift that drive towards learning instead? In full transparency, I feel like I may have kind of like lost the thread of your original question. So what's your kind of reaction to what I've said so far?
Great. And actually, and you said one sentence, which is just like my going to be my mantra for you said, mitigate the risk and move on.
Interesting.
Right. So my question was, how do you get comfortable, as getting close to my goal weight number? I mean, I'm within a pound now, right? So like, fuck me, I'm there, right? Yeah, and now it's okay, so I had like a day yesterday where I had a normal food day, right? It was easy, right? And then today I'm like, oh God, don't fuck this up, don't fuck this up, right? And you just said, just mitigate the risk and move on. I can do that.
Okay. Well,
I can
let's play that
totally do
forward.
that.
So yesterday you had a good day. Today you woke up thinking, don't mess this up. How does that change? How does your thinking change if you're like, you know what, mitigate the risk and move on? What's different?
Oh, I mean, I just loosen my grip on myself. I'm like open hand, and I'm at my best.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you think, like, does Corinne eat perfectly, do you think?
No, and her thing today was about 80-20, right? And I totally believe in that.
Yeah.
For everything.
When you're in the 20, even if it was unintentional, even if you're like, oh, I didn't love my choice. How do you treat yourself?
Kindness, compassion, forgiveness, gentle.
Is that what you're supposed to say, or is that what you actually do?
Well, I'm not perfect at that. I'm 80-20 on that. I'm
Felt very
80-20 on
meta.
that. Gotcha.
Yeah, I mean, so like for me, definitely 80-20 for sure. And there are times when I overeat. There are times when I overeat and I like my reasons. And there are times when I overeat and I don't like my reasons. And there are times when I don't even think about it. And I like the next day, I look back and be like, oh man, I was totally checked out. I wish I'd thought about that. I don't like that. However, I move on. I mitigate the risks and move on. It's like, okay, maybe tonight we can be just a little bit more present, a little bit more intentional. I don't make it mean I failed. I don't make it mean the regain is on its way. I just been like, all right, didn't love that choice. Let's move on. How plausible does that kind of thinking sound to you? Or is there part of your brain that's like, I'm too perfectionist, it won't work?
Oh, I'm 100% with that.
Okay, awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that was like, oh, yeah, mitigate the risk and move on.
Okay, great. So as you play this forward, you're a pound from your goal weight. You're
Yes.
like, basically, I'm here. So what does that look like in practice this week, this month, next time you go on vacation?
Oh. I don't, okay. Well, I don't know. I don't know. I'm not sure I've got like a game plan on that.
Okay. Do you ha It's summertime. Do you happen to have any vacation planned?
Yeah, I'm gonna be gone the month of most of the month of August.
Sweet. Somewhere fun?
Yeah, I'm gonna ride my bicycle across northern Spain.
And for everyone listening, Susan is a total badass. She you rode your bicycle across the United States, right?
Yeah, five times.
Oh, only five.
I did,
Wow.
and I went the first time at 50.
Wow. So for
So,
anybody who's thinking it's too late, I'm too old, catch that thought right now.
yeah,
Wow.
exactly.
Okay, so August, you are riding your bike across Spain. What do you anticipate the food choices to be like? How do you want to eat? Let's just look ahead a little bit.
So it's just the food choices are just fabulous. Just
Spain.
absolutely. Yeah,
Yeah.
fabulous. And my favorite way to eat is tapas and being on a bike. And actually, you know what? I do know it's actually it's eat when I'm hungry, anything I want, stopping enough.
Okay.
It's 100% easy. For me, being on my bike, and I was on a big ride yesterday. It is the time when I am most present with myself.
Ah. Why is that?
I'm not 100% sure. I think there's something about the physical activity that extends for hours. I think there's something magical about being above the earth. And it seems like magic, but it's not. It's physics, right? So
Also,
there's
kind of
something,
magic.
yet magical about it. And it's moving. I'm outdoors. It's moving through the world, and I'm mind, body, spirit, just connected on a bicycle.
So let's say you're riding across Spain and you have a night where you're just really tired, or you met some great people and you just weren't as tuned in, and like, whoops, you way overate, or maybe you overdrank or something. The next morning you're like, oh, not great. Then what?
Get on your get mitigate the risk and move on. Get on the bicycle and pedal.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a new day.
It's a
Yeah.
new day. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a new day. It's a totally new day.
Cool. So, how compared to when you lovingly, thank you so much, raised your hand, and the question you had, where what has changed for you?
I'd like to say a lot, but all I can really say, Lizzie, is like not much, but maybe there's like a sliver of hope and possibility of a new day. But that old shitty in my head said, yeah, but you won't really know until tomorrow morning when you step on the scale again. And then you won't really know either until you step on the scale, on Friday, next week. And so I think I just have got to build up some consistency and back-to-back days with this.
Okay. Let's go there.
Okay.
Tomorrow you step on the scale,
Yeah.
and if it's the same, what's your brain saying?
Checkbox.
Okay. I'm guessing similar if the scale went down.
Oh, woohoo,
Okay.
checkboxes.
And what is your brain saying if the scale goes up?
You did something wrong.
Okay.
And then I would have to look. Then I would have to look and say, did I? What were my choices? You know, what were your
Yeah.
choices? Is it true? And then I would just say, you know what? It was just what it was. And if there was nothing that I could adjust, I'm just gonna mitigate the risk and move on.
Okay. Now, is that again, is that like really what you would walk yourself through? Okay.
Yes,
Yeah.
yes,
Nice.
yes. Yeah, I think so. I think so.
And let's be honest, like I step on the scale and the number is up. I'm not thrilled. I don't be like, it's all fine. I don't like it. But I don't make it mean that I did something wrong. I don't make it mean that I'm a problem or a failure. I make it mean, all right, I made a choice. I'm not loving that choice right now. What can I do different?
Can you always tie it to a choice?
Good question. No. I would definitely say throughout the years of my maintenance, sorry, weight loss and maintenance, for me, weighing every day works for me because I can see the little blips and so forth. And so early on in my weight loss journey, I would see the blips and be like, what the fuck? Why is it doing this? That doesn't make any sense. I was good. And then I begin to be like, okay, well, I had this or that, it makes sense or it doesn't. And the times when it didn't make sense, I definitely started off with like, it's not fair. I just had some extra crackers or I just had some, Mexican, very in my head about it's not fair. For as Kareem would say, like wallowing in my shitty diaper. But eventually I was, like big girl panties, and it was like, listen, I don't have to like reality, but I don't have to argue with it either. If the fact that I had a bunch of crackers or I had Mexican makes the scale go up, it does. Like, I don't have to just sit there and be like, why, universe, why? It should be like, this is what happens. Therefore, now I can be like, when I go out to Mexican, the scale's gonna be up tomorrow. Is this Mexican worth it? Usually, yes. I'm like, all right, that's fine. Are these crackers worth it? Are these cookies worth it? I just got back from vacation. Oh my gosh. There was a place that had cookies where legitimately the dough ball was the size of a baseball. Those were worth it. And the scale was up. And I was like, I didn't like the scale being up, but I was also like, yeah, it's worth it. So I kind of got away from your question. Can I always tie it back to a choice? It took me some time to decipher, particularly the things that I'm like, this doesn't make sense. What else could it be? So then I began to find some nuance of like salty food can make the scale go up. Starchy food can make the scale go up. Needing to have a bowel movement can make the scale go up. Extra stress can make the scale go up. Poor sleep and like random subtle things. And definitely there are times where I'm like, I don't get it. Doesn't make sense. Okay, move on. Drink some water. Let's try again tomorrow. But again, it's I try and keep the day as normal as possible, whether I can, it makes sense to me or not.
That is so helpful.
Really? Why? How?
It's perspective.
Okay.
It's perspective that I didn't have.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're so welcome. Yeah. And so I think just taking that idea a little bit further, I think as I began to learn, these are the things that make the scale go up for me, then I began to be like a little bit more choosy about them. Like, how worth it is it for me? And that's how I eventually like kind of use the seven or better tool, which is Corinne's version of the velvet rope of like I seven or better tool is if you take a food, let's say Mexican, and you
Oh,
rate
yeah.
it on a
Oh, okay.
scale of 1 to 10, where is this Mexican or these chips that are the endless bowl of chips on a scale of 1 to 10, they are a what for me. And I have learned over time that chips, while tasty and can absolutely be mindless and so forth, they're kind of like a five for me. They don't, I don't love the aftertaste, but like certainly if I'm not thinking about it, I can go to town and be like, why, how am I looking at the bottom of the bowl? So now that I know that chips are more like a five, I'm like, are they worth it to me? And if so, sometimes I'm like, I just want the taste. I'm like, all right, how many? How many is worth it? And how many is will I regret later because they didn't taste that great to me? Whereas, I don't know, cookies, for example, a really good cookie is a 10. I'm telling you, those cookies on my vacation were a 10. And so that's where it's like, it's worth it. And I'm gonna also own that the scale's gonna be up and it's okay.
Okay. Because I'll just share one thing that I know when the scale goes up that I thought it should always go down. After I do a big bike ride, and I would think, oh, I, expended, I mean, the scale typically always goes up. And I think it's because I'm sore and there's, some level of, physical, for me, exertion and inflammation or whatever in my body the next day is trying to recover, where I would think, oh my God, you just rode your bike for 6 hours, right? The scale, and that is like, no. So now I understand that's what's going on. It's not,
Yeah, that is a
yeah.
great example. I remember m many years ago now when I worked for Noom, I had a client who had had a colonoscopy and the scale went up and she was like, "This makes no sense to me. I spent a whole day and a half not eating anything." And I didn't understand it at the time either. I was like, I don't, "It doesn't make much sense to me either." Fast forward a few years, I have a colonoscopy myself. I said same thing. I ate nothing for a day and a half except that liquid grossness. And the next day the scale is up. And so I can now surmise, again, it's a guess, that the salty nature of whatever makes you flush your system out is very salty. And so you're probably holding on to a lot of water. And so intellectually, it doesn't make sense that the scale is up because I didn't eat anything. But again, the reality is the scale is up. It's now a pattern. So the next time I have a colonoscopy, I can be like, listen, I don't have to like it, but I can expect the scale to be up tomorrow, and I'm not going to make a big deal out of it.
Yeah.
So sometimes it doesn't logically make sense, but you can be like, instead of, shaking your fist at the universe and being like, it's not fair, you can be like, well, if it was fair, what could it be? Maybe it's inflammation. Maybe I'm dehydrated and my body's hanging on to more water. Those kinds of things.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Cool.
All right. Well, and we're just shifting that lens of perfectionism towards learning. They're getting it wrong does not mean that you're not good enough. It simply means that you mitigated the risks. We're moving on. You learned something. Go live your life.
There you go.
Yeah. Which is interesting because actually that brings up another point that was on my list of like possible things to talk about if no one raised their hands. It was like, what is the whole point of all this effort anyway?
Well, since no one else is raising their hand, I'll just, shall we just keep pressing on?
I do have one other person who raised their hand
Oh,
this
good.
week,
Okay.
but what was
Okay.
the was there a thought that you had in response to that?
Well, the one thing I'm noticing now that I'm less obsessed about, food and whatever, yeah, the rest of my life is opening up. And then the question is, huh, how do you want to fill it?
Oh yeah, what a good question.
It's a brilliant question, right? And I've been at this semi-retired things enough that, it's like, huh, yeah.
I
Yeah.
remember one of the first camps I attended, Corinne asked the question, if you stopped making weight loss the focus of your energy, what would you spend your time on? What would you focus on? And a lot of people were like, I don't know. And it's kind of a jarring question because we've spent decades making weight loss the main focus of our efforts. And if she was like, if you were not allowed to focus on weight loss, what would you focus on? We're like, oh. Well, interesting. So, anyway, it's an interesting question.
Anyway, okay. Thanks, darling.
All right. Good to see you, Susan. Thank you so much.
Okay, bye.
Bye. All right. Thank you, Susan, for raising your hand. We've got Nancy has raised her hand. We'll see if Nancy is also the person who's my client. And anybody else, like if you are crushing it at maintenance, great, good for you. If you have like anything that's not totally going perfectly, hey, raise your hand. And it is Nancy, my client. Hello, Nancy. Oh
Oh,
no,
good.
your video turned off.
I'm trying to get my video. My video won't. It goes on and then it goes off.
We had your lovely picture for a second.
Yeah.
Let me just see if this works. Ask to start video. Do you get anything?
See.
Oh, we get. Oh, yes.
Hi. So, this is unprecedented, right?
Hi.
So I did a thing. I was on Facebook yesterday, which I try to stay off of now. But anyway, what are your thoughts on metabolic confusion?
I want to make sure I'm understanding what you mean.
So when you're in the last 5 to 10 pounds that you want to lose, we all know it's hard AF, right? It just doesn't work. For me, we both know I am a very habitual eater. I also, on this thing, learned that our bodies will start responding to what we eat and become very complacent. Oh, she's having salmon again. Okay, so we don't have to expend as much. And I'm just wondering if that really is a thing. And the solution to that was you go 3 or 4 days on a high carb or, a good diet, to where you're not seeing the scale move. I mean, and 'cause I've been like just a couple of pounds every, which is normal on a daily basis to lose. You can lose a pound a day, and then the next day you put on two. That's just our normal body rhythm. I mean, 'cause I eat, eat when I'm hungry, stop when I've had enough. I poop every day. My water's on lock. My sleep, we're working on. So it's like, so you go 2 to 3 days on, say, a good diet, and then the next, I mean, 3 or 4 days, and then the next 3 or 4 days, when your body has gotten used to that 3 or 4 days, now you're going to confuse it and you're going to go on a better diet so
And
that you're.
just for clarity, when you say good, you mean like good, better, best. We got it.
So it's like if I have fish for, both meals, because we know I do that, salmon, we know I do that. And I eat the same thing for 3 or 4 days, my body's going to say, oh, okay, I don't have to expend because this is her new normal. And then I switch it up and it's like, oh shit, I'm not used to this. So now I have to do something. And so you change up, the carbs. And he said, it's like more protein 3 or 4 days, then more carbs 3 or 4 days, then and you switch back and forth so that your body doesn't know what it's doing. And I've always felt that, well, I'm eating the same thing, so I should be losing weight because I know, calorically I do that too, for data. And you would think, it under 1,000 calories a day, I would be losing weight, which I'm not. So what are your thoughts on that?
Thank you for the question. And I preface everything I'm about to say is I am not a nutritionist. It's been a long time since I had my fitness trainer license and so forth.
You are a scientist.
I'm a scientist. Exactly. And
Exactly.
so everything I'm about to say is based on I've done the carb cycling. I've done the like low carb, slow carb, cheat day, vegan, like all of us. When I finally decided screw all of that. I'm going to figure out what this body responds to. That's when I started to figure things out. And so I would always encourage you to be the scientist with the, subject of one, you, and test out and see how your unique one-of-a-kind body responds to things. So my experience may be different than yours, but there's probably some parallels. So my thought on metabolic confusion is there's some truth to it with a caveat of like, don't go crazy on it. So for example, like your body is a beautiful, beautiful organism. It is great at adapting. And so if you eat the like literally the same thing every day for years, it will get very good at using the kind of the minimum amount of calories for that to survive because,
Yeah, that was, he said adaptive.
right. The same thing will happen like if you're lifting and you're only always doing the same kind of like the same routine. You do the same workout routine every single time, you never vary it. Your muscles get strong at doing those few moves, but you could work the same muscle in a different way and like, it's very different. So basically, yes, the body is great at adapting. Where I have the caveat is I like again, like I've done carb cycling, which is basically like a couple days of really low carb and then a day or two of really high carb and to confuse your body. I
Right.
did not like that for a couple of reasons. Number one, I treated it more like a cheat day. Number two, it like my body just like blood, I know now the blood sugar spiked. I had the huge fatigue by like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I felt gross. So I would do it a lot differently. If you're gonna try some mixing it up, do it in little doses. So for example, instead of only salmon, shift up your protein sources. So bring in some chicken, some steak, or I don't think you're not whatever the word is when you don't
I'm
eat
not, no, I'm
red meat.
not vegan. Yeah, no, I do all the, I do the pork, I do the steak,
Right.
I do the salmon, I do the, chicken, the turkey, I do all
Eggs.
the protein.
Yeah. So there is value in being like, I am stuck and stalled. Maybe this isn't about having less. Maybe this is, I do need to add a little bit of protein, but don't add 500, grams of protein. Add like a little snack of protein. Add a little bit. Maybe you're like, maybe I don't have enough carbohydrates, but don't go crazy with it. Like, add in a little something so that you're kind of controlling as many variables as you can using the experimental mindset, but like just testing this one thing. If I add in a snack with a mix of carbohydrates and proteins and fat, with speaking to Healthify, A, what does that do to my energy? What does that do to my sleep? And what does that do to the scale? Try it for a week, try it for 2 weeks. Try not to make it mean anything and just experiment and see what happens. Like, what does your body respond to?
So you would say more, do it more for a week versus a couple of days.
I could see a couple of days as like a, an experiment in itself. So like if we take the whole 7 days of a week, you've got 2 or 3 days of I'm eating my normal stuff, 2 or 3 days of I'm eating something a little bit different. And then days 7 and 8, I go back to my normal stuff. That to me is like a a complete experiment. So no, I basically I'm agreeing with you. I wouldn't necessarily eat differently every day for 7 days. It's like basically just mix it up a little and see what happens.
Okay. Yeah, I thought it sounded interesting because, I mean, at this point, we know I'm stuck and I'm, we've talked about it. I don't know what to do. You don't really know what to do. Yeah, I mean, it's like, I mean, I know you have other ideas. And so I've been changing what I'm eating slowly. Adding in more rice and like more pastas, because I know I don't do a lot of carbs.
Okay.
I mean my vegetables,
Right.
which I don't need a lot of those either. And eating twice a day is salmon, chicken, pork, steak, whatever, little bit of vegetable. And then I'll have a snack after dinner. And then of course, my midnight meal. And that's where I am eating, like one slice of bread every single day. So that's an added part. But other than that, it's I don't know. And I know, and the reason we know, just for full disclosure to everybody watching or going to see this later, I do count my calories because I also know on sleeve surgery, my stomach isn't big. I also know on the GLP-1, don't get hungry. So, it's like two meals a day and then a protein drink made with water in the morning.
Which
So
is another reason why I encourage you to be the scientist and the expert on you, because you have, I mean, everyone is unique, but you have some unique circumstances. You've had sleeve surgery, you're on the GLP-1, you're 5 feet tall. Your unique body has unique needs, and I'm not the expert on you. So we can kind of figure out and tweak and be like, let's experiment, let's tweak a little bit. Don't go crazy, but like add in a potato every now and then, add in some pork and see what happens.
okay, that's yeah. I thought it was very interesting. Because I do, I am a creature of habit, and I eat. I mean, but but then again, I still have, I have my oatmeal, and I have things that I eat regularly. There was a time that when I was, doing, like the baby gold potatoes, and I would have, at least two of those, instead of the green beans or the corn or, the broccoli. But my protein, I mean, I know I'm getting about 100 grams of protein a day, and my calories are I'm trying to stick to around 1100, because I mean, for me, upping it that 400 calories is a lot.
And for everybody listening, when Nancy says she's trying to eat 1100, that's because she was eating well below that. So you've been gradually moving it towards a higher number to see how that impacts your weight loss.
For example, yesterday I wasn't hungry. I didn't eat anything. I had my protein drink in the morning, but I didn't eat anything until almost 7 o'clock. And adding up what I ate and what I was still going to eat, I couldn't get past like 600 calories. And it's like, oh, fuck no, that's not gonna work. So, I'm like revising my plan. I mean, and I just added a snacks. It's like, did I eat on my plan? Did I eat on plan yesterday for lunch? No, because totally blew by it. Did I eat my dinner on plan? Yes, and I assess those every single meal. And so, like, right before dinner, I assess my calories. And if I'm not there, then I start adding snacks. So I added, like yogurt dipped pretzels. I mean, and it was crap shit. That's what pisses me off. Trying to get to that 1,000 calories, so it was yogurt dipped pretzels. It was oh I put my yogurt that I was going to have for lunch, protein yogurt, down as a snack because I didn't eat as my lunch. I had God, what else did I
Well,
have?
there's always room for there's always room for fun foods, just as Susan was talking about the 80-20. But like particularly if you're looking to experiment and looking to mix things up, you want to do it with quality foods.
Yeah, that's it. I didn't. It's and you'll see my Slack. When you go in and read it, it was shit food to get the calorie count in.
Okay, so how would
And
you adjust?
amazingly enough, I lost a pound.
Okay,
It's
that's
like
data.
eating the shit. Now tomorrow, is it going to be back up? I don't know, but I mean, I don't stress over the pound of, but it just coincidentally, I get on the scale and I've lost a full pound. it's like, okay, something's weird.
Well,
So,
let's co continue to collect data. And you know,
oh, I'm collecting all the data.
when you say you're eating shit, like yogurt covered pretzels is, you know, on the
Not
scale,
necessarily.
it's it could be a better food rather than a good food.
Yeah, I mean, I did that for the calories, because that was 140 calories. Oh no, I'm sorry. I ended up not eating the pretzels. Oh, I had coffee cashews for 230 calories, but that also had 5 grams of protein. So I'm, you know, it's like, okay, not bad, not good food, but you know, I mean, it's a good food, not a better or a best food for me. And I mean, I still, with what I put on my plan yesterday, was going to have, oh, a little over 1,000 calories. I ended up at 890 calories because I ate so much. I had to eat so much food after 7 o'clock, and it was just I couldn't do it. So, you know, but I
So
just, you
as
know, it
you're
was.
experimenting with the idea of metabolic
Yeah.
adaptation, you know, plan ahead for some more quality foods that you like, rather than getting stuck with, oh my gosh, it's 7 o'clock and I need to get some calories in. Where can I get some junk? You know. So yeah.
Yeah.
So basically to summarize, when you ask me the question, what do I think about it? I think that there is some veracity to it, but as you experiment, do it in little bits and just continue to be curious and test what your body is telling you.
Okay. And you know, I only brought this out because other women, it may help other women too. Which is, you know, why I don't get coached, because I don't think my stuff pertains. But anyway, we know that's a whole different call.
Well,
So.
I know that you raising your hand has helped other people because not only the people listening right now, people listening to the replay, they may be like, I never even heard about metabolic adaptation. What is that? And so they're now realizing, like, yeah, there is some validity, but don't go crazy with it. So thank you for that. Cool.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you so much. I will look
You're
forward to
welcome.
seeing you later this week.
Wednesday.
All
Okay. Have a
right.
good day. Okay.
You too.
Bye.
Bye. All right. We're gonna have Trina come on up, and I got one person who has put into the Q&A. What do we got? Cassie says, so my original goal was to get to a BMI of 25 or lower. I've achieved that. Then I bought a Renfo scale and it informed me that my body fat percentage was considered obese. Oh, thanks, Renfo scale. I'm 68 and trying to build muscle. I'm trying to accept that it's going to take longer to change that number than it did to lose the weight. Any suggestions? So, I think what I'm hearing you say is that by you thought you were doing okay. Because you got your BMI lower, but then you stepped on the Renfo scale and you're like, oh shoot, I need more muscle. And that was very frustrating. Agreed. But also, I had a conversation with Julie about this. Julie's here in the chat, I think, earlier today, that like, be careful of letting some external source of authority tell you what's true for you and your body. Like, sure, those metrics came about for a reason, but also, you know, it doesn't take into account how much weight you've lost, how much extra skin you have, you know, your bone mass, things like that. So anyway, I'm coming to accept it's going to take longer to change that number. I think you mean the percentage body fat than it did to lose my weight. So number one, I would say, first of all, like give yourself a huge high five for the fact that you're adjusting your muscle mass, that you're looking to gain muscle. Like that is amazing and huge, especially as we get older. We don't want to fall and break a hip. And what's the rush? You know, if you're at a happy weight and you're now looking to improve your muscle mass, fantastic. What's the rush? You know, so if Cassie, if you have a follow-up to that, please let me know. But again, every little bit you're doing to increase your muscle mass is a huge win. Like, who cares what the Renfro scale says? So let me know if I answered your question and maybe to put a follow-up into the Q&A. Thank you. So, hey, Trina, good to see you.
Hi, you too. Good to see you again.
Yeah, thanks for raising your hand.
Well, sure. You said people need to raise their hand, and I'm always up for coaching. So
I love
it
it.
worked
I love
out.
it. What's on your
All right.
mind?
Okay. So my lowest has been 145, and I have been dabbling between 153 and 154. And so couple of weeks ago, I said, okay, we're going to do something about this. We're going to figure this out. So I started thinking, what am I going to do different? First thing I did was, you think you drink water, you just, oh yes, I drink water, but you really don't unless you're counting it and making sure and being intentional. So the first thing I did was I said, okay, I'm going to have 64 ounces of water every day. And so I did. My next thing was I decided I was going to, when I snack, it was going to be protein. I don't snack a lot, but it was going to be protein, except for my cutie that I have every night. So I did that. And then I was also going to tighten up the 80% eating until I was satisfied. And so I did. And so over the last couple of weeks, I've lost 3 pounds, which has been a long time since I've lost 3 pounds. And really, I think the water made the biggest difference. Now, something else I noticed is back in January, or probably into December, I started eating an extra cutie every night, just one. Well, the other day I was adding up how many calories is an extra cutie. It turns out that it's 1,200 calories a month extra. So that's where that three, I had been 150 to 153. That's where that 3 pounds came from for those 5 months, was one little baby extra cutie a night, because I didn't need it. And I mean, one is plenty, but I was just eating two. So that's one thing we're going to do, is go back to the one cutie a night and not the two. And I started thinking, well, how simple, let's reverse that. If one little cutie can make a difference, what can eating like half an English muffin, over a period of a month, what kind of difference can that make instead of eating the whole one? So, all that's good, got some good stuff in place, but here's the problem. The next week, which was last week, kind of back into my old habits of not making sure I get all my water. Oh, I tried a little bit, and well, I don't have to have protein, at every snack. And so I just, what do we do to stay in the things that are working? Why can I not stay motivated to do the things that work?
Oh, such an interesting question. Definitely going to answer that. But real quick, I wanted to just acknowledge what you were saying that, wow, little things make a difference in both directions. And, as I said when I was talking to Susan, I definitely spent plenty of time being like, this little thing, it's not fair. It shouldn't make a difference. But when I finally was like, it doesn't matter if it's fair or not, the fact is it does. And so now we can choose, is it worth it? Is that extra little bit worth it? Okay, so how do we stay consistent? It's very interesting because I was just creating some content on consistency. And by the way, August, the theme for August is consistency, helping Corinne write those letters, lessons. And we were revisiting the phases of change. And so, just as a quick refresher, the phases of change is like, this is how change happens over time. And change is basically creating a new habit, which is what you're asking me. How do I make this a habit rather than a fun thing I did for 2 weeks and then I stopped? Well, you go through the phases of change. Phase one is you're doing the new thing 20% of the time, 80% of the time, you're forgetting. Phase two is you're doing the new thing 40% of the time, 60% of the time, you're forgetting. Phase three is you're doing the new thing 60% of the time, 40% of the time, you're forgetting. And phase three is where we are kind of like in our danger zone. Because we have the thought, what we make it mean is, I should be further along by now. I should be better at this. I should be more consistent. I should. And really, all that's happening is you're right where you're supposed to be in the process of making a habit. You're simply in phase three. And by the way, the phases are not necessarily linear. Sometimes you're kind of moving from phase one to two to three to four. And sometimes you have a stressful season, or it's just summertime, or random things pop up and you kind of backtrack a little bit to phase two. And there's a lot to that, because we make it mean I just can't be consistent, when really the truth is you are in exactly where you're supposed to be in the process of behavior change, which is that in phase three, you're doing it 60% of the time and you're not doing it 40% of the time. That's not a problem. That's normal. When you catch yourself sliding back for that, that third week, then you're like, okay, next week, let's bring a little bit more intentionality to it. And just another added layer to that is a lot of times people will say, like, I can do great for 2 weeks or 3 months or whatever it is, and then something happened, I fell back into old habits. That also is very, very normal. So I use the analogy that like our brain's pathways are a lot like subway tracks. So if you think of a city that's got a bunch of subways, so like New York City, lots of subway tracks underneath the city. And the Department of Transportation says, you know what, we're going to decommission the red line and we're going to build a new one, the blue line. Okay, great. This is happening in your brain. So you're like the old, neurons that fire together are the red line. You're building a new habit. This is the blue line. New habit, people. Great. But in real life, in the, underground of New York City, when they shut off the red line, it doesn't disappear. It's just that the trains aren't going down it. It's just gathering spider webs. But it's still there.
Yeah.
And same thing is happening in your brain. That connection is still there. It's just not getting electricity sent down that wire when you're doing the new habit. Then a stressor comes along. Hard day, someone's sick, whatever. And your brain, when it's stressed, it says, yikes, we want to feel safe. What feels safe? Oh, things that are familiar. What's familiar? That old pathway, red line engaged. So when you have something go on and you fall back into an old habit, usually that's simply a sign that, like, you had a stressful day, you had a stressful week. Not a problem, not a sign that you failed, not a sign that you wrecked all your progress. It's simply, oh, hey, let's bring a little bit more intentionality and like re-engage the blue line. That's all that is. What are
Okay,
your
I
thoughts?
like that.
Okay.
I like that thought.
So really, if I were to boil down everything I just said into one sentence, which maybe I should have started with that, is what do we do about that? It's like change what you make it mean. That when you're not consistent, instead of being like, oh no, I can't be consistent, just be like, I'm right where I'm supposed to be. I'm in the phase three. This is normal.
Right. And just pay attention to the blue line.
Right. Yeah. And
Go
it's
jump back on it.
right. And it's so very normal that the red line's gonna, pop up every now and then. That doesn't mean anything other than you had a stressful day
Yeah, you had a
or you're
stressful
tired.
day, and feeling eating a little bit more than what you need feels good in that moment.
Sure. Yeah. Or, you just got a little less intentional.
Yeah.
I've been noticing that about some of my habits lately. Like I'm like everybody else. In the morning, I've got great intentions, but in the evening, I'm like, I totally forgot about my intentions. Not
Yeah.
making it mean that I'm anything. It's just like, hey, let's bring a little bit more intentionality to the evening. That's all.
Okay.
Nice.
Sounds good.
Okay. And also, thank you again for what you said about like just that one little extra, 1,200 calories a month. There you go.
Yes. There
Do
you go. For
nothing.
5 months. Yeah, that equals 2 or 3 pounds.
Right.
And
Cool.
when you're in maintenance, 2 or 3 pounds is a lot, you know?
Right. Yeah. And I think that's another thing, kind of going back to what I started with the maintenance documentary, is maintenance doesn't mean I've arrived, I can stop paying attention. Maintenance is just like paying attention is sort of my normal. And it's like riding a bike. Like when
Yeah.
you ride a bike, you're still pedaling. You're just
Yeah.
not necessarily like pedaling super hard and crushing it every day.
Yeah. That's good.
Great.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much, Trina. Good to talk to you. I appreciate you
All
raising
right.
your hand.
Sure. You too.
Have a great day.
You too.
Bye-bye. All right. We've got Cassie has written back. She said, yes, thank you. I'm trying not to let the scale derail me because I have achieved a lot. You absolutely have, Cassie, for sure. And, kind of like what I started to allude to when I was talking with Susan is, you want to increase and improve your muscle mass. Great. I like muscles, as you can see. But again, like, why? What is the point? What's the point of all this effort? Is it simply to get to a place where your Renfro scale says whatever number? Or is it so that you can feel good and feel confident in your life and know that, like, if something comes along and you stumble, you will be able to get back up? So what's all this efforting for? That's a good question. And then Nancy says, I heard that the 30 days makes a habit is no longer true. It is more like 90 days. Thoughts? Good question. So there is an author named Judson Brewer who's written a couple books about habit change that are pretty good. Basically, the number of days it takes to change a habit completely depends on the habit. There is no one number. It can be, if it's a really, really ingrained habit, particularly if it's tangled up with really powerful emotions like love, comfort, or safety, that can take a really long time and like years worth of effort to unwind. If it's a simple thing like having an extra cutie, with dessert, and you're like, it's not complicated. I just got kind of, unintentional about it. It doesn't have to take a lot of time at all. So, unfortunately, Nancy, the answer is like it takes the time it takes. I think that the average is somewhere in the like 200 days, is what they say these days. But again, like there is no one number of like it takes this many days to change a habit. It's more like it depends on the habit itself. It depends on the level of intensity and intentionality you're putting to it. And I would also say like how you're thinking about it matters as well. Like if you're thinking about it as like I am doing XYZ to lose weight, to in order to get an outcome, it's going to make it hard to make it a habit because it's not becoming your life. It's not becoming your lifestyle. It's becoming I do X to get Y. Here's an analogy. I had a client once who was trying to make exercise a habit, but she was getting really frustrated because she wasn't seeing a lot of results. Like she would exercise for a couple of weeks in a row, go to the gym, be consistent, and she was like, it's not making a difference on the scale. And I said, do the exercise because you like it, because you love the way it makes you feel. Don't do the exercise in order to lose weight. And so, like, if you're eating more vegetables, like, eat the vegetables because of how they make you feel, how, it's like, this is becoming part of my normal rather than I'm only doing this in order to lose weight. I got a little off track there, but, anywho, Nancy, that's kind of the thoughts is it definitely usually takes more than 30 days to change a habit, but it all depends on the habit itself. So sorry, it's sort of a vague answer. Anyway, thank you so much, everybody, for joining me today on our maintenance call. Thank you for all of your questions and for raising your hands. And I will see you next month and look forward to August's content because we're all talking about consistency and I'm helping Corinne to write that content. In the meantime, go check out that maintenance documentary. It's awesome. All right, y'all. Take care. Bye.